It is that time again. We welcome you back to The Bookcase. I'm Charlie Gibson. This is The Bookcase with Kate and Charlie.
Hello, book nerds. I'm Kate. How are
you? It is good to have you all with us. We're going to do something really different this week, and I hope you will enjoy this idea. As we've gone through, we have found this to be not just authors talking about their books, but talking about writing and how you write. And it's become a sort of masterclass in writing. And so Kate's husband, David, who handles all the technical aspects of this podcast, had a great idea and took it to you, Kate. You took it to me. The idea being
that we wanted to get an eyewitness account from a writer of what writing a book is like from start to finish. And we talk a little bit about this when we get started. Writing, I think, is a little bit like fingerprints. It feels to me like when we talk to writers, everybody does it a little bit differently. And I hope that amongst our audience out there, we not only have avid readers, but we maybe have one or two people that are thinking about writing, but maybe are held down by that self-doubt, that self-criticism that certainly has nagged me all my life, that maybe the fact that everybody does it differently and there's no quote unquote right way to do it, that it will give people hope and inspiration, I hope, to maybe sit down and find their own voice, or at least that's always been a lofty hope of mine. And so when David came to me and said, I bet we could find a writer who could walk us through their process from, you know, once upon a time all the way to the end, that would be a really interesting learning experience for us.
And so the first name we thought of was Kate's friend with whom she went through university, Northwestern, many years ago, J. Ryan Straddle, who has been so successful in his novel writing career. And I hope you've read one of J. Ryan's books. The Kitchens of the Great Midwest was his first book. His second was The Lager Queen of Minnesota. And his third, one of my favorite titles of a book ever, is Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. They're all such evocative titles, I think. But his books are wonderful. We just caught him at a good time. He has just started a new book. Katie called him and said, would you do this? And he said, oh, my Lord, let me think about it. And then he said yes, which is, I think, a pretty gutsy thing to do. We start today, and you'll hear sort of a long conversation with J. Ryan about his process, about what he's doing now, about the germ of the idea that he's got for his fourth novel. And then we will go back to him when he comes to us and says, well, I've got something I want to talk about. Or we'll go to him and say, how's it going here? And we'll bring him back every few weeks. And I think you'll find it really, really interesting. One of Kate's and my favorite books is Stephen King's book on writing. Great short book that Robert Caro wrote called Working, about how he writes biography.
Robert Caro wrote a short book?
He did. He did. Called Working, about his techniques of writing. I just think it's a really, there's nobody, I've said it before, there's nobody that I admire more than people who can conquer the craft of writing, particularly at novel or full book nonfiction length. So I'm really excited about this. I am really excited about it. We will keep you abreast of how this is going. We'll reprise a little bit each of J. Ryan's conversations as we go back to him and talk to him. But here's our conversation with J. Ryan about The Bookcase's Great Experiment. J. Ryan Straddle, it is a real pleasure to have you back in The Bookcase. And we are setting out on a grand experiment together. I appreciate your saying, yes, sure, I'll be your writer in residence. I don't know what that means, but I'm going to try it. But what it means or what it may work out to be, we don't know. This is a grand experiment. And Katie, it was your husband, David, who came up with the idea of approaching a writer. And when you talked to me about it, what was your concept of what this would be?
I'm fascinated by the mind of writers. For me, there is no profession that would be more riddled with self-doubt and self-criticism than writing. And one of the things that has amazed me over the couple of years of doing this podcast is writers talking about the way they do their craft and the fact that there is such variety. We have writers who write to the last line. We have writers who've started in the middle and written forward and backwards simultaneously. We have writers who've outlined. We have writers who don't outline. We have writers who are convinced the characters write the book themselves. And we have writers who say, no, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. So the masterclass in writing has certainly been fascinating to me as a host. So a couple of months ago, my husband came to me and said, you're always talking about how different writers are when they go about their process and how they approach their process differently. What if we talk to a writer from the beginning to the end of their process, from when they started to when they published? And I was like, well, who'd be crazy enough to do that? And he said, J. Ryan Straddle. And he was like, you have a friend who's a writer who you already talk about writing quite a bit. And so I think it's a brilliant idea with the caveat that, yes, that J. Ryan does it this way. It is the way J. Ryan does it. It is different from how John Irving does it, which is different from how Anna Quinlan does it, which is different from how anybody. I mean, it's almost like fingerprinting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. And that is true. I can't imagine anybody could write a book about this is the way you write a novel. Now, I've read a wonderful work by Stephen King about how you write on writing. I read a wonderful book by Bob Carroll working about how he works. But it is so idiosyncratic how writers work. And I think this will be fascinating. So, J. Ryan, when Katie brought the idea to you, did you think, Kate, this is the dumbest thing I ever heard? Did you think, oh, that's intriguing? Or did you think, if I do this, how I'm going to make it work? What was your first reaction?
My first reaction was, wow, this will hold my feet to the fire. Having any kind of exterior accountability is exciting for a writer, especially when you're out here in the woods, literally in my case, and no one is expecting it. Like there's no, what's the word? Structure, like no MFA program, no second book of a two-book deal where the draft is due at a certain point. No, I go from one book deal to one book deal. So I'm flying blind here. I don't make a living unless I finish a book. There's also a lack of other accountability. Well, okay, I do have a novel writing crew, but they don't expect things by a certain date. So that said, it was exciting to me to have a couple people who know books, know writing, love novels, and will ask informed and incisive questions about the process. I've really enjoyed my conversations with both of you about my finished work. The conversations about the work in progress, I assume, will have no less impact to me in terms of drawing out of me what is important about that process, because you've been such wonderful and insightful interviewers about what makes me tick and my previous books. And well, I think you can get that here too.
Do we catch you at a good time? In other words, I think we're catching you at the beginning, at the genesis, at the you're just wrestling with an idea. Katie said, when I first talked to him, he said, well, I got 2,500 words and I don't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. That's to me a fascinating thought that's in your head. So you're beginning with the germ of an idea. What is that idea? And talk me through how you envision how this is going to go.
Okay. Well, when I was on tour for Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club, my most recent book, I realized I'm writing about my mom again. I'll always write about her in some way. She's the load-bearing wall of my existence as a writer and also my themes in my writing process. So I realized I had written about her up until the point she died. I had written about my mom in a period of time where she was a waitress before she went back to college and got a degree or completed her English degree and went on to do what was most important in her life. And she died right when her life was getting really great, right when she was at her absolute happiest in her life at age 55, older than Mariel in Supper Club, but similar point in life, just when she was hitting her stride. And I thought, I'm going to pick up there. I want to write a hero's journey about a woman starting at age 55. And I want to complete my mom's life. I want to write about what she could have done had she lived. I want to write the third act of her life. That's my genesis. Right now I'm calling her Peggy Johnson. My mom's early notes on a novel she would have written, the main character was Peg. So there's that. And then Johnson was my mom's mother's maiden name. So it's a really direct reference to her. I'm giving Peggy Johnson resources my mom didn't have. I haven't gotten to write that part of the book where those come to play yet. So far, I've mostly been writing her backstory. This will be of interest to both of you. I like to read while I write. I like to read things that I think are tonally consistent or harmonious with what I'm writing. So this is what I'm reading as I'm writing. I'm rereading World According to Garp because I love the way they flash back in that book without making it seem like a flashback, the way they compress history in a really gorgeous, voicey narrative way. It doesn't feel like you're stepping out of the story when you step back in time in that book, like when they go back and talk about that history teacher at the boys' school, you know, and they tell his whole story of his somewhat mundane World War II class and so on, I didn't feel like the story was pausing. And so it's elements like that that are inspiring to me and that I want to have in my head when I'm writing. Now, is my story going to be structured like ARP? Is it going to be? No, totally different setting, different characters. It's just a matter of tone. I kind of got the idea from musician friends of mine, one in particular, Mandy Duncan, who I met at Northwestern. He used to be the band OK Go, and he used to not listen to music while he was in the studio unless it was something similar to what he was trying to do. So he was very cogent of not stealing. He's like, I just want to feel a certain vibe when I walk into that room. And my agent gave me a really great piece of advice recently. It's like, when you sit down to write, think about something that makes you happy. And I thought, yeah, that's, I think I've been doing that. And I just hadn't thought of it like that before. Just being this really positive and generous mindset where I'm bringing in positive inspiration and just making it my own. And I've done this in the past with my first book. I read a lot of Alice Munro and Dennis Johnson while I was writing Kitchens of the Great Midwest. And I returned to Alice for Lager Queen, and let me see, Flannery O'Connor as well for that book. And so, yeah, when I thought about what do I want this book to be like, or what's a tone that can help get me started and put me in the right mindset every day when I sit down to write, I'll sit down and read like 5 to 10 pages of GARP, and then I'll go downstairs, you know, get a cup of coffee, come back up, and like all the specifics of GARP will have vanished by then, but the feeling of it will remain, and I'll sit down to work.
You make a really interesting point about it. So many writers today switch back and forth in time. And so chapter 2 will be, you know, 1931. Mm-hmm. Chapter 3 will be 1945. And then they go back and forth and back and forth. I'm very thankful for those yearly references. It's to me a little clunky. I think you're absolutely right. In that novel, John doesn't give you a chapter of exposition. He doesn't tell you, you know, I'm now going to educate you on how we got to this point. Mm-hmm. He seamlessly moves between periods of time. Yeah. That's a rare skill. And I think that you are studying that or trying to internalize that is a really interesting piece of the process you're going through.
I still feel like every time I sit down to write a novel, I'm writing my debut novel over again. You sit down and you look at Microsoft Word document one, that blank paper, and you go, wait a second, how do I do this again? So I'm going to demonstrate something else really quick. I keep a journal of every day I write and what I've written that day. And in this journal, you know, this is what I have so far. I've crossed out the first 3 days because I didn't keep them. That's pretty common. Like I usually end up finding my way into the voice. And that to me is not a day lost. That's a very successful day of writing if I get closer to finding that voice, even if the work itself is not used in the novel.
I'm interested in what you said about coming up with an ending. I want to go back to your process for a second. So you've got this concept. You have your mom's second act in your head. What is next for you? I mean, do you literally stare at a wall until you come up with the ending? Is the ending a sudden inspiration? And you're like, I have to write to this? Like, what is the process of coming up with the ending?
Well, I think of, you know, I think of the character. I think of what kind of journey she's going to be on. What journey would I want to write? What journey of hers would teach me something? What journey of hers would put something in the world I'd want to see? What journey of hers would scare me a little bit? So all those elements go into place. And I think, like, what sense do I want to have when I set this book down? How do I want to feel if I was reading this book and I completed it? I thought of that with each of my first 3 books. And that to me goes hand in hand with the theme. Once I lock into that, I know what my theme is. Sometimes I kind of think of the theme first. I think, well, I want this book to be about reconciliation, or I want this book to be about legacy. And so how can I visualize the scene that will complete this and satisfy the arc of this character within that theme? So I get a sense of that. I usually don't write it right away. I'll write down notes about it. Like, hey, this is what I think the location is going to be. And this is how the character is feeling in that location. And I'll start taking notes about that. And then I'll think, okay, now how can she earn that feeling? Or how will that feeling be satisfying to a reader after what she's experienced? So then I start, you know, I go back in time and I figure out the roadblocks and the achievements and the, you know, joys that she gets to experience on the way to that conclusion.
So a couple of things about mom, about your mom. First of all, how old was she when she passed away?
She was 55.
And where was she in terms of life? You have siblings?
I have one younger sibling, yeah.
Okay. And so what ages were you when she died?
Let's see. I was 29 and he would have been 25.
So you were launched. Mm-hmm. She had completed the, how am I going to keep Jay Ryan out of jail stage of her life. Yeah. And so she was at a fulcrum, really. She was at a critical point in her life. Did you have conversations with her about, okay, what do you want to do now, mom? Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go? So that you have some preconceived notions of where she might have wanted to go that you are incorporating into the novel.
I also have a sense of what she would have liked to have done. You know, I think the ultimate tragedy to me of her death is not just that one life ended, it's that a lot of possible lives ended. I think there was a lot of different things she could have done going forward from 55, but also a lot of life she would have enabled in others. And I want to explore that too. One of the points of the book I'm writing now is that generosity to other people is a life-giving force and enables them to live fuller lives, therefore enables you to. You can live through other people through your generosity to them, through enabling them to achieve their dreams or do things they didn't expect. So I think she could have done that. And that's something I'm exploring here too. So it's not just about her, it's about her friends and her world. One thing I was really struggling with before I started writing the book was how novelists are often viewed as lone wolves, that we're just out here coming up with ideas on our own. And, you know, one name is on the cover of a book. That's who wrote it. And I couldn't disagree more. I feel like I've arrived where I am today in my career because of dozens, if not hundreds of people who made me possible, who put their generosity and their resources into me to help me achieve my dream. And I think about that a lot. So I think one of the journeys I'm considering for this character, Peggy Johnson, is for her to be put in a situation where she's considered to be kind of a lone wolf success and how she has to go about trying to disabuse that notion. Because one of the things that I've written about a little bit in my previous novels, especially Lager Queen, was the myth of the lone wolf, how rare it is that someone achieves great success in a field completely on their own. You know, just Howard worked their way into notoriety, you know, and I really want to tear that down. But at the same time, I don't want that particular theme to override this character. I have to keep it in the back of my mind, but I don't want it to, what's the word? I don't want this book to get dogmatic or didactic. So it's got to stay within the character's voice. And I'm going to try to figure out a way to do that.
You've talked about how important your mother, how to a certain extent you write to keep your mother alive. You've talked about that before. You've also brought some of your own personal struggles to your writing. But this is the first time you're bringing a real world voice that existed in your past to your writing. So I guess I want to ask you, is this scarier as you're starting out?
Yeah, it's scarier, but I'm also, you know, I'm basing this character on my mom, but I'm also making her a little different. Mm. You know, she's got a different background than my mom does, a different attitude. Well, not a completely different attitude, obviously, but a different, I think a different default setting is a better way of putting it in terms of how she reacts to opportunities. My mom was a little more circumspect than this character is. Like, she would hear an idea and she'd take it home and sit with it for a bit before responding. And this character is a little bit more impulsive. I mean, not that my mom wasn't impulsive. She was probably the most impulsive person I knew in Minnesota, but that's low on the impulse meter when you get to California. Yeah.
Is Peggy going to have two sons?
Peggy's going to have two children, but I think a son and a daughter. I haven't really written about them yet. That's what I'm leaning towards. Maybe one son, but yeah, I'll see what's best for her. I'm still at the phase where I just wrote a scene and I went like, this scene doesn't have what I need. And I, you know, did that magic writer trick of adding the third character to the scene. We're like, oh yeah. And this third character I just added to this scene, I realized, oh, this is probably going to become a really major character. And this character is going to sort of become like the anti-hero to Peggy in the long run. And I just thought of her now because I just needed a dramatic ballast in one particular scene that may not even make the final book. And now through writing that scene, I've created this character that's going to be sort of a contrast or a foil, I guess is the term we use out here in LA for Peggy. And I thought, wow, you know, when I sat down to write this book, I didn't realize I needed that. So yeah, it's interesting to talk to you at this point in the process, because I'm also not sure how much of this is going to happen because of things like I just said. I sit down and I ultimately make these impulsive decisions that can create new opportunities and or wipe out existing text. I'm really unsentimental about that as a writer, by the way. Like, I retcon my work all the time. I think of a new character that obviates like 80% of decisions I've made so far, and I just go back and delete that stuff and start over. So it'll be kind of fun to explore that and go, hey, Jay Ryan, whatever happened to that third character you're talking about? Oh, I took her out. Yeah. Turns out she wasn't important after all.
She's dead.
She's dead. Yeah.
I know that Brooke, your partner, is your first reader. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested. Is she also the person that gives you the thumbs up on the concept that says, yeah, okay, you're ready to sit down and start writing? And have you ever pitched her a concept where she's like, no, Jay, that's not it. You're not going to write that.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Or she'll usually say, try to find more there, is how she'll put it. Like, okay, that's not a bad idea, but it can't carry a novel on its own.
Gotcha.
You know, that's a scene, or that's a subplot, or that could be an element, but not, I wouldn't put that on the cover. Yeah.
Does your first reader, Brooke, your partner, did she know your mom?
No, unfortunately, no. They missed each other by about, 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, so that's interesting, because she'll see it with an open mind.
Yeah. Mm. And do you know what? She does kind of know my mom, because my son, our son, is a lot like her.
Really?
Yeah. Like Audie does a lot of stuff that makes me go, that's something my mom would have said, or something my mom would have did, or would have done. would have did. Like, now I'm talking like Audie. I see an awful lot of her in him. And I've said it to Brooke before. I said, you've never met my mom, but she's in him. She's in him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you one last question. Have you told your father and your brother you're writing this? And are you at all concerned about them as readers?
No, I'm not. I'll tell them about it. But they know I've written about Karen quite a bit in the past. You know, Mariel most directly so far in Supper Club. No, I think they would be totally cool with this. Yeah, they've never critiqued my work like that. They've never said, oh, you shouldn't have written about that. Even a character like Jordy in my first novel, Jordy Snelling, the deer hunter, who does a lot of stuff directly pulled from my brother's life, like, you know, killing a doe, not realizing that the fawn was right there. That's something that happened to my brother. Yeah, he was like, oh, okay, yeah, you got the details right. You know, it seems like that's what they're most concerned about. Like, like they read my books and like, oh, 75 Ford didn't have those kinds of fenders that you described. Like it's like they'll troubleshoot it on that level. But in terms of the general character or evolution of the narrative, like, no, they're pretty cool with it.
Well, I think it's a very gutsy thing you're doing, because as I said at the beginning, we're not sure exactly where this is going to go. We hope that you will call us when you have something that you want to talk about. We will call you. Hopefully not with the pressure of some editor saying, where's my manuscript? But we will stay in touch with you. Oh, Katie's holding up her hand saying, yeah, I will.
I will. I will. I will. I love being the ball buster. I will do that. I will do that.
Also, like I said, I don't have a contract for this book. So when I'm completed with it, I can also talk about my process in shopping it. Yeah, if you think that would be of interest to your listeners.
You mentioned that at the beginning, and I was fascinated with it because your first novel was incredible. You had people bidding for it. You were mm-hmm. whatever. And I would think somebody would have come to you and said, Jay Ryan, we want to sign you up, you know, a series of more novels, standalones or whatever, but we want more of your work. And you haven't done that.
No.
Why?
Well, not to go into the financial weeds here, but it's been to my advantage to continue to be a free agent.
Mm. That's interesting. They talk in baseball about signing contracts. There's a home team discount, which is that if you sign with the team you're playing with, they think they can get you a little cheaper than if you want to go to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. You want to go to the Yankees, obviously.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've been with the Yankees.
Is it a little bit like other writing? I mean, like one of the things we talked about in screenwriting, you and I went to film school together, and William Goldman's classic book, Adventures in Screen Trade, nobody knows anything. So the second they find a writer who has success, they make them sign contracts in blood because they're like, we found a writer that is proven successful. That's not the case in the literary world. They don't want you to sign the contract in blood, so they have you for life.
It may be for some, but I'm not looking for that, or I haven't prioritized that. I feel fine doing the way I'm doing, and it's worked out for me. I guess the danger is if someone signs you to like 3-book deal, 4-book deal, and you found, oh, wow, okay, these books are successful. I've just undersold myself and now I'm stuck, you know? Yeah, that's the danger there, is that you haven't bet on yourself. Whereas I feel like I want to bet on myself.
Yeah, it's something of a high wire act. Mm-hmm. I can walk that tightrope. I can make this work. Yeah. J. Ryan, this is going to be interesting.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be wonderful, yeah.
I am excited about it too.
J. Ryan Stroh, I hope you'll stick around. After this, we'll do some rapid fire questions.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Rapid fire questions for our writer in residence, J. Ryan Straddle. If you were going to rate your confidence level at this point as you begin this novel, what has your confidence level been 1 through 10 starting other novels? And what is your self-confidence level for this one?
Kitchens 1. when I started it. Lager Queen, probably 5. Supper Club, probably 1 again. And this one, probably 5. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you have that character so vivid in your mind?
Yeah. There's so many places I can go with her. It's just a matter of choosing one, you know, of just reining it in. I think I'm going to write a lot of material that isn't going to make the final book. But like I said, there's no wasted days. Every day I sit down to write, it's going to be a day closer to being done one way or another. And being done in terms of telling a completed, fulfilling story. But I want to add something really quick here in that my confidence level is also completely reliant on if I've written the day before. Like when I get into it, like I haven't written in a little bit. I just came back from the Tucson Festival of Books and I didn't bring my computer with me on that trip because I knew I'd be too busy and it would just be frustrating to have brought the tool to write and not use it. So I left it behind so I could concentrate on being the public facing writer instead of the writing writer. But now I'm back home and I can be the writer again.
So another question. Has your writing routine changed since your first book, Kitchens of the Great Midwest?
Yeah, because my family's gotten bigger. Yeah, having a child will do wonders for evolving your writing habits. Yeah, I used to be a morning writer. And as it turns out, most small children are morning people. And that kind of got wiped out when at night, you know, you can set him to bed and like, okay, he's going to stay asleep. Also, at night on the West Coast, no one's hassling me. I'm not getting emails from New York. You know, there's a sanctity to it because the rest of America is asleep already.
When you're sitting down to write, are you editing too? Do you edit what you just wrote, or do you start afresh every day and not look at anything until you're done?
It depends. Later today, when I start writing again, I'm going to go back and read everything I've written, but mostly to reacquaint myself with the voice and get back into the voice. I'll probably end up editing as I go because it's hard not to. But after writing for a few days, then I'll just pick up where I left off the day before. I don't need to reacquaint myself with the voice anymore. It's already there.
You write on computer or longhand?
A little of both. Like before I started writing, and I think I can show you this page too. Like I stayed up really late one night, sat in the dark, like, and just wrote all this stuff in longhand, you know, and I only used about 5% of it, but it was part of the process of, you know, oiling the joints to get the machine moving again. And so, yeah, usually I'll write longhand for a while before I start typing. But then once I start typing, once I've got the Word doc going, then it's just straight to that.
I think my last rapid fire question is a Brooke question. Okay. So you're getting somewhat familiar with your routine. Mm-hmm. You know where you are and what you're like at that point. Does Brooke have a routine to prepare for you writing a book?
Well, I'm happier when I'm writing. And so she's happier that I'm happier.
Good.
We just have to communicate every day about, oh, this is what my schedule is, or this is what I expect it to be. Or if I tell her, hey, I'm really on a roll, I'm going to need tomorrow night, you know, can you put him to bed so I can start a little earlier? But it's just communication. You know, she's okay. Totally cool with 99% of it if I let her know in advance.
Okay. So she isn't like, okay, page 120, I got to go out there and give him oxygen now. He needs oxygen.
Well, if she hasn't heard from me in a while, if I haven't come downstairs in like 5 hours or something, she might come up and knock and like, are you going to have dinner with us? Or, you know.
Yeah. J. Ryan Stratton, this is going to be great fun. I look forward to it. The great experiment on the bookcase.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so excited.
Our rapid fire questions with J. Ryan didn't turn out to be too rapid fire because he had more to say that he hadn't added to our conversation about this business of writing.
Well, it's one of the reasons that I think he makes a terrific writer in residence. I don't think I've ever asked J. Ryan in our entire friendship of 2 decades a rapid fire question that he has answered rapidly. He is so thoughtful. He's thoughtful about what he says. He's thoughtful about what he writes. And I think that's why, you know, I feel like we have talked to some writers where we say, why did you make that choice? And they go, I don't know. The character kind of made it for me. J. Ryan is very thoughtful. He's deliberate. And I think that makes him an ideal writer in residence for this bookcase experiment. I'm really excited.
I think that thought, Kate, is borne out as you read his novels. They are both very intriguing. They are good reads. And they are, as you can tell when you read them, very well thought out. So we'll remind you of the people who made this podcast possible and remind you also that in coming weeks, we will be talking to J. Ryan as he works through his new novel.
The Bookcase is a production of ABC Audio in partnership with Good Morning America. It is produced by David Canada in conjunction with SureCam Productions. Asal Essanapour is our producer, Laura Mayer and Simone Swink are our executive producers. We give special thanks to Taylor Rhodes, Amanda McMaster, and Sarah Russell of Good Morning America, and Josh Cohan, Nania McLean, Vika Aronson, and Brenda Salinas-Baker at ABC Audio.